Hello and welcome to Spin Unspun, the podcast about leaders and leadership in the world of corporate affairs and corporate communications. I'm Damien Rees from Instinctive Partners, in conversation with the best and the brightest in corporate affairs, asking all the questions and discussing all the topics that really matter to people who shoulder the weighty responsibility for corporate reputation and effective communications. Today, I'm delighted to be joined here in the Instinctive Studio by Rachel Garstang, Head of Corporate Communications and Stakeholder Engagement at Grosvenor. Rachel, welcome to the podcast. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining me today is my Instinctive co-host, Jeremy Durant, our Chief UK Media Strategist and also Head of Risk and Crisis Management here at Instinctive Partners. Jeremy, welcome back to the podcast. Great to see you.
Thank you. It's great to be back on the pod.
Rachel, first of all, tell us what Grosvenor is and why it's famous. And just tell us a bit about your role exactly. What does it involve?
Well, Grosvenor is a privately owned global organisation. What does that actually mean and what do we do? Most people will recognise the name as a business that represents the interests of the Grosvenor family. But for me, that's not what makes us famous. I think that we're really well known for the urban property portfolio that we have, particularly the places that we manage in London's Mayfair and Belgravia. We support about 1,000 businesses there, tens of thousands of residents and millions of visitors every year. We also built and now manage Liverpool One, the retail destination in the Northwest. But Grosvenor's a far broader business than just property. We recently brought all our operating companies under the Grosvenor brand, and that includes the global property interests worth around £11 billion, a food and ag tech investment business, our rural estates activities across the UK. It's a really broad church in terms of the activities that the business undertakes.
So if there was a iconic property, as it were, or street or place or square or whatever that you manage, as it were, in the property portfolio, what would it be?
I think you're asking me to pick one of my favourite children. I think what Grosvenor really tries to do in the property sphere, and particularly in London, is we're about places, not buildings. You know, we care as much about the spaces in between the buildings as we do the buildings themselves. And that's one thing for me that makes working there really special. So one of the iconic spots, I think, would be somewhere like Grosvenor Square. Mm. Actually, not just a building. The green space and the function that provides, the thing that draws people to it, is just that tranquility in the centre of London.
Yeah.
But also it is the most stunning historical environment. You can sit there and you can look at the architecture and it's just fantastic.
And the built environment and real estate has been a real theme of your career. Can you talk to us about how you arrived at Grosvenor? What's been some of your kind of key career moves?
Yes, I am a bit of a lifer in the real estate industry. I don't think anyone grows up thinking, I'm going to work in corporate communications. You kind of fall into it through various paths. Mine came through the financial comms industry. So I started out in a small agency called Tavistock, a really big stable of AIM clients at the time. It was the AIM boom. We listed a company what felt like every month. It was a massive growth period. Everything from kind of Indian logistics to the Association of Real Estate Funds. And it was a great grounding. I'm a big fan of small agencies as places to learn. And I then moved on thinking I want to get bigger deals, bigger companies, look at the opportunity. And I spent some time at FTI Consulting in their real estate arm. Very different time in the market. It was the global financial crisis, rights issues, all the challenges that went alongside the crunch in the banking industry. And about the time that quarterly reporting really started to kick in, I thought, actually, I would like a change of scene, a broader brush approach to communications. And so I took an in-house role at CBRE, which is the global real estate advisory business. And I spent about 6 years there, latterly as head of European communications. I had a short stint in investment management as well, and then realised that I missed the real estate industry so much. I took a role at Grosvenor and joined there, firstly in a media relations role, and that has now expanded into a much kind of broader corporate affairs role.
So Grosvenor, big private company. A lot of our audience, I think, are familiar with comms and corporate affairs in public companies. You're a private company, obviously. How do you organise yourselves from a communications and corporate affairs perspective?
I think the rebrand here is quite important for the context. Grosvenor has a number of operating companies and a global management suite that looks after the kind of big vision for the business. And I joined the UK real estate business in their communications team. But the rebrand really was about bringing all these very different parts of the business, food and ag tech, investment, rural estate management, under the Grosvenor brand. And it made sense for the communications team to come together with its different disciplines. So we now sit together, which is fantastic because you get your kind of classic corporate communications functions, but also we sit with graphic design, web development, etc. And we can work as one team directed to the part of the business which needs the most support, but also you have that expertise and different perspectives to bounce off as well.
And what are some of the main communications and reputation threats that you have at Grosvenor? Indeed, what are some of the opportunities?
In the world broadly, there's quite a lot of preconception around a business like Grosvenor and kind of what a privately owned business can contribute to the UK, to society, to the economy. And we form kind of several functions in terms of our communications team and strategy. One is to help the operating companies do their job and achieve their ambitions. We're a business like any other. But also we think a lot about license to operate and demonstrating what a business that like Grosvenor is very long term and really does have a soul. It thinks very deeply about what it contributes over the long term to society and the environment and the economy. And our job is to think about how we can demonstrate that in different ways to audiences, which will help the business conduct its business and achieve its ambitions. But also demonstrate how we are living up to the expectations of business from society at the moment and thinking beyond that, how we anticipate what comes next and help the business respond to those expectations as well.
It's very interesting what you say there about, I guess, making sure people understand what a private company like Grosvenor contributes to society, what its role is, and I suppose its social utility in some ways. I mean, how do you make that come alive? I mean, that must be quite a big comms challenge, isn't it?
It is, but I think that the least exciting thing for a comms person is no change and no challenge.
Yeah.
So we view that in a positive way, and we take that challenge very seriously. And I think that what all comms people are struggling with at the moment or looking at is, how do you tell your story more compellingly? We're not short of stories or examples of what the business does, but it's how to execute that in a way that people are going to find interesting and want to consume, whether you're a politician or a member of a community or a resident in a place. And so it's looking at the skill set in our team and how we really develop that ability to showcase what the business does in an interesting way. I sit in our London office. I spend most of my time there, and you can walk out the door and you can learn about the history of the place, but also see physically what we are changing every day and how that is helping the West End as an economic centre adapt, or a place as, somewhere like Grosvenor Square, where that's somebody's back garden in a way. And so it is, I do love the tangible nature of what we work with, whether it's dairy farming, forestry, or the urban environment. It is something that is quite special.
I suppose that quite eclectic mix,
yes,
that you describe is what makes you unique, right?
It is.
But it's a unique challenge as well.
It's a benefit and a challenge. We have these incredible places that are, I think the word stewardship has come into the vernacular quite a lot, but that is the approach that Grosvenor takes. It's an incredibly long-term approach. And it doesn't mean you can't be agile. I think people sometimes equate long-term with being slow. And that is a cultural challenge the business has gone through. And actually something that's quite fun to demonstrate these days, how a business that thinks really long term can still be innovative, can still move quickly and respond to things like COVID or the climate crisis. And having a very visual backdrop, a tangible place where people can talk about the impact that change has had on their life, their business, and their experience in a place is really wonderful.
How do you surface, you know, some of the stories? Because as you say, you represent so many businesses, organizations that are part of your placemaking. How do you surface some of those kind of good stories that they're doing? I noticed, for example, you've got sustainability awards, which is quite an interesting concept.
Yes, we do. Particularly when we talk about those communities in London, our businesses, part of that community, were based in that community, and we do we actively manage a place. So there's somebody in our office who is out there on the streets talking to these businesses, helping them manage the place and the building all the time. So it is. It's finding those stories is sometimes easy and sometimes challenging, but the thing that we talk about a lot as a team is you can't sit behind a keyboard every day. You've got to go out. You've got to talk to the people, visit the streets, know who's on the streets, find those champions and those stories, and then find the channel to tell it on. What's the right channel? And quite often we find that a lot of those, you know, particularly the business owners, and in Mayfair and Belgravia, 2/3 of the businesses that occupy our places are independents. So they see the value in us amplifying what they do and us talking about whether it's their own sustainability journey through the sustainability awards that we run. The UK property business has incredibly progressive carbon commitments.
Yeah, right.
But as a real estate business, and as many businesses know, the biggest levers you have to pull, you don't always control. To reduce carbon. So how do you work with, how do you champion, how do you encourage the people who can actually pull those levers for you to act? And the awards were a way of celebrating and in some ways rewarding innovative sustainability behaviours in the retail and office community that we operate in. And also they surface these amazing stories that we wouldn't otherwise know about that are happening on the estate and around us.
You talked about obviously bringing all the disciplines together in terms of communications and engagement, but in terms of headcount, how big a resource do you have at your disposal?
The London-based team is around 12 people, and that covers brand, graphic design, web development, internal communications, public affairs, social media, and traditional corporate communications. So while that is not a small number, if you look at each discipline, we kind of cover a lot of ground between us.
You mentioned that one of the unique things perhaps about Grosvenor is its diverse range of assets, but also this very long-term view that it can bring. And I think that's true of pretty much every family business that I've come across, and we advise families here at Instinctive. And obviously Grosvenor's linked to a very well-known family, the Grosvenors, in the form of the Duke of Westminster. What's the relationship between the family's communications needs and those of the business?
I mean, they're very much interlinked in a way, in that the reputation of one very much affects the reputation of the other. Organisationally, we're really quite separate. Myself and the people who work in the Grosvenor business are there to support the reputation of the business, and we're very much directed at the business activities. Obviously we don't work for the family directly. We do consider the family's reputation in what we do and how we conduct ourselves, we remain in close contact, but it's not as interlinked. They are quite separate.
We're coming towards the end of the year, and you know, many agencies and many in-house teams will be thinking about 2024. What are your thoughts on terms of the key priorities for communications for the organization, and how do you go through that kind of planning process?
Planning starts incredibly early. It seems to start earlier and earlier every year. So what do we look at? I mean, I think there's different layers to how we look at this. It's, you know, kind of, if you go back to the reputation strategy and really what's very important, how do we progress the elements of that? What are the key things, the operating businesses that we are particularly directed to? What's the activity that they're going to be undertaking? And then we look out to the outside world and what is happening there that might interest us, but also might affect us as well. And how should we respond? Is that in a tactical way or a meaningful strategic way? There's, you know, then a process of actually, between all the priorities, what is really important, and what are we able to do in the year? And we have some very exciting long-term projects. So we have a campaign around, a policy campaign around supporting heritage buildings to respond to the climate emergency. And that involves advocating with partners like the National Trust and Historic England for policy change. So that is something that we look at every year and think about, how do we progress that agenda? And that's really supported by the businesses sustainability commitments. Looking ahead this year, there's some really exciting developments coming through. We've got a major development that started this week, just off Oxford Street. But also there are parts of the business that are experienced, comfortable communicators. And there are some through the rebrand, which are just starting their journey about actually how do we communicate more frequently and more effectively. And it's actually about supporting them, building that confidence and that program. So the different businesses are at different stages of maturity in terms of how they think about communicating and also about managing reputation as well.
And you're obviously steeped in property experience. When you think about the sector as a whole, as far as one can, what would you say to your fellow property communicators and corporate affairs professionals? What would you say to that audience are the sort of main challenges for the sector?
I think that the one that's not going away is climate change.
Right.
How we both, you know, kind of live up to our responsibilities there, but also how we look at the resilience of our portfolios.
Okay.
And how they adapt to climate change. You know, ensuring that your portfolio remains, you know, kind of interesting to occupiers. It remains resilient in terms of a warmer environment, different types of climatic effects on real estate and on cities. That is the big question that the industry is really grappling with. The second area is, you know, kind of obviously the economic outlook.
Yes.
At the moment.
Interest rates.
If you want to invest in the resilience of your portfolio, how do you make that happen? How do you do that creatively and over what period of time? And at the same time, the bit that everyone's looking at is, do we know enough about how COVID has impacted the retail sector, the office occupancy, the desire for what kind of space, how much space are we going to need, and how is it going to be valued? And those questions are answered by much smarter people than me, thankfully.
But do you think people have that interesting point around hybrid working or people's not spending the same amount of time in the office? Do you think that's already having effect on things like placemaking?
I think it is, but only to the extent, you know, and we're very lucky, we own assets in central London. They're highly connected. We have a competitive advantage already. But that said, it's underlined the need to continually invest in what you have, and that it's not just about that, the building itself. It's about the environment you're in. It's about the services in the building, around the building. You know, it's no longer what's just attractive, you know, to an employer from a space perspective and a cost per square foot perspective. It's, you know, how are my employees going to react to this? Do they want to come here? And what function does the office provide? And, you know, I know through our business and certainly through other peers that we speak to, whether it's your chief talent officer or your HR, you know, there are different voices in that property decision now as well, just reflecting that, you know, the magnitude of the decision, but also the importance that the employee experience is on that as well.
What makes a great corporate affairs comms leader in your view? And can you talk about perhaps any mentors you've had during your career?
Oh, there's so many ways you could go with this one. I think there's probably three things. I think everyone will have a different list. I think that I would kind of pitch my first one in terms of curiosity. You've always got to want to learn more about the company that you work in, the sector it operates in, your own function and discipline, and how that they interact. Know about your management, what keeps them up at night, trying to anticipate and use all that knowledge to help you anticipate how a business might respond to an issue. And I think that kind of continual interest in learning makes you better at your job, and it provides you with that mental agility to switch between subjects, which often comes with the role as well. I sometimes think about the corporate affairs role as kind of collection of odd jobs. Sometimes you have the core of what you do, but a lot seems to fit in that bucket sometimes as well. And those three kind of things really help ground you. And it's probably come through in some of the other things I said. You know, relationships are incredibly important to a role like this. Mm. You need to understand people. You need to be able to have honest conversations with internal and external stakeholders. You need advice yourself sometimes, and building those networks of relationships internally and externally really help you execute what you do, and they make your life easier. And I'm a big believer in people who care about relationships and that kind of element of critical thinking. And I think also, you know, kind of there's a third part is you need to be able to advise management, have that curiosity, have that knowledge base, know them to support them. But also intrinsically, the role comes with a team, and actually caring about your relationship with your team, how you bring them back to the big picture, the big goal. What's a distraction? What's a priority? When all of those things are being lobbed into the Ministry of Odd Projects, how do you keep sight of the longer term goal? And that is something that I've experienced through people keeping me on the straight and narrow, through great managers. And I've had great managers and I've had not so great managers, and I'm fairly sure everyone has. And so I don't think I've ever had a particular mentor, but I look to the kind of how people who've managed me have conducted themselves, but also back to the relationships piece. I've been very conscious, particularly post-COVID, to build my network of people in similar positions and people in very different positions to mine, and talk to them about how they approach their issues and their challenges and their opportunities. And I think that they, you know, kind of being given that sense of, you know, there's always a way through, there's always an answer, there's always something that you can learn from and take heart from and take inspiration from is really what I do. So apologies, I probably haven't said exactly, or probably haven't thanked in a kind of award speech kind of way some of the people yes, that have managed me
Oscars
excellently
moment.
Over the years. You know who you are if you're listening. But I think that it's really about that network, because different people can support you differently at different times.
And looking back on your career then, I mean, what would you say have been one or two of the most challenging moments?
There are things that are thrown at you. And like I said, no change is a bit dull sometimes for a communicator. So sometimes what you would feel would be the most challenging situation, actually, I find myself the calmest in some regards. So unexpected management changes, high profile protest campaigns. At one point in a role where I had a kind of an international role, we had an affiliate office hexed in Africa. My phone rang and they said, can you sort this out, please? What do I do? What skill set do I reach into to deal with this one?
And if you weren't in a comms role and hadn't chosen comms as a career, what would be your dream job?
So we played this game in the great financial crisis amongst me and my friends. And, you know, I found out a lot about them, yen to make cheese and open an artisanal shop of some description. And I never had a good answer for this one. It's shamefacedly. I always hoped for another similar job in a good company. So I am going to be very shamefaced and say, having found my niche, I really rather like it. Would like to
this is your dream job.
Yes, it is. I am a total failure at that question, unfortunately.
Rachel, thank you very much for your company today and your fascinating insights. You've been listening to Spin Unspun, the podcast from Instinctive Partners about corporate affairs and corporate communications with myself, Damien Rees, and my co-host today, Jeremy Durant. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Our guest today has been Rachel Garstang, Head of Corporate Communications and Stakeholder Engagement at Grosvenor. Join us again for our next episode of Spin Unspun. Details at instinctive.com. Find us on social media on the usual channels. And if you'd like to get in touch about Spin Unspun, just drop me a line, damien.rees@instinctive.com.